Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. In Pennsylvania, education funding is a constant issue. In 2014, the U.S. Department of Education deemed Pennsylvania the least equitable school system in the country, and poor school districts around the state regularly find themselves on the brink of financial meltdown. These issues might seem insurmountable, but just a few hours north, the Canadian province of Ontario found a way to even the playing field across school districts. Keystone Crossroads education reporter Kevin McCory recently visited Ontario to see what Pennsylvania could learn from our neighbors to the north. WPSU's Eleanor Klibanoff spoke with him about that project.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Kevin.
Well, thanks, Eleanor.
So before we go to Canada, could you give us a snapshot of the challenges facing Pennsylvania's school districts?
Well, it depends on the school district, really. There's much resource disparity and inequity in Pennsylvania. So you can have one school district that has the most modern technology, up-to-date everything, small class sizes, very well-resourced. With staff and faculty, and then, you know, across the boundary line, essentially the opposite. So it's those distressed districts in Pennsylvania that tend to really not be the beneficiaries of Pennsylvania's system and the philosophies that have gone under it. So, for instance, in Philadelphia, you have vacancies across the board that prevent kids from having the correct teachers teaching the correct subjects, not getting all the curricular needs that they are supposed to be mandated to get to be fully realized. You know, you have situations where there's just simply not enough guidance counselors, not enough support staff, not enough nurses in buildings where these things are in need every single day, not to mention what happens in classrooms. It happens not just in Philadelphia, though. Clearly, it's Reading, it's Erie, it's smaller districts that are in pockets of poverty across the Commonwealth. So it's a statewide issue.
And why is that? What about our funding system is so inequitable?
Well, we have a very high reliance on local property taxes to fund schools. So it's like something like 35% of all funding comes from the state. The biggest chunk comes from the locality and some money comes from the federal government. So obviously right there, if you have one wealthy community next to a poorer community, the wealthy community can raise more money in property taxes for its schools, and thus it can afford to provide, you know, more resources to those schools. In theory, state money is supposed to help level the playing field. The state is essentially redistributing wealth through, you know, broad-based taxes in its revenue from personal income taxes and sales taxes, and that money, you know, should be smoothing out some of that inequity by, you know, basically giving more of a boost to Reading and Philadelphia and Erie compared to wealthier districts. The problem that has grown over time is that the way the state distributes its share of money really doesn't align or sync up with the needs of districts and the needs of kids. And that can be traced back to a decision that was made in the early 90s, where they said, you know what, we're going to make a policy that says we're never going to send less money to a district that loses enrollment. And that was a big boon to the rural districts in the state that had been and continued to lose enrollment. And it made it easier for them to plan year to year because, you know, if they lose 50 kids, but they still have to send buses all across a wide county and service a very large geographic area, it made sense to not cut their funding stream. But 25 years down the line, what's happened is you have these districts that have lost tremendous amounts of population continue to get money as if they had the same amount of kids in 1991. And conversely, the districts that grew in enrollment didn't see a requisite increase in aid. And all that to say that nowhere in the calculus for how the state's giving out money are these student-based need factors, such as poverty, such as English language learner status, and, you know, an array of other student-based need factors. So without taking into account the actual needs of students, the way the state distributes money largely, it just doesn't make a lot of rational sense. It really helps these districts that have lost enrollment, and that's a noble proposition, but it's been to the disadvantage of the districts that really serve and face the most challenging burdens. Now, there is a new school funding formula, right, that takes into account all of that, and people widely laud it, and it was a bipartisan effort that is celebrated. But there was a critical distinction in saying we're only going to use that formula to divide the new money that we put into the pot every year. So right now, that's about 6% of the entire pot of state money. So the large majority is still being doled out based on this kind of irrational system that's rooted in this hold harmless protocol.
So it sounds like change is coming pretty slowly to Pennsylvania, if at all. But you recently visited a place that has managed to make bigger changes on these sort of issues. How did you choose Ontario, Canada as a comparison for Pennsylvania?
Well, I've been doing reporting in Erie. And when you're in Erie, you're close to a lot of different places. You're close to Ohio, you're close to New York, and you're very close to Ontario, Canada. So it just kind of struck me geographically that here's this place that's a two-hour drive from Erie, Pennsylvania, where in Erie, the superintendent, you know, is talking about closing down all the city high schools and busing kids to the suburban districts based on, a moral call for equity, basically saying we're not being set up to serve these students correctly. So the best thing that we could do is shut our high schools down and send them elsewhere to better resourced suburban districts. So that's the scene in Erie. And then to think, well, just 2 hours away, here's a system that's just doing things completely differently. And they are absolutely prioritizing the students that would be the analog of the Erie students. And so, you know, going through the international literature and really reading up on, you know, many different reports and international tests that are administered and have been done over the years, Ontario again and again was being, you know, cited as a global leader. And to think, here's this global leader, not only in performance, but also in equity. And it's so close to Pennsylvania, you know, and it spurred me to think I should go there and check it out. And having been on the ground there and talked to a lot of people and done the research, you realize, well, it wasn't always that way in Ontario. In fact, their system used to look a lot like ours did in the 1990s. They had a school financing system very similar to ours, largely based on local wealth, local property taxes, and through a few initiatives, they decided actually to completely eliminate the local property tax funding schools, and all funding is now doled out from the province. So that creates right there a much more redistributive system that then crucially they say, we're going to dole this money out based on student need. So they're all their money is coming from the central province, and it's all being delivered based on need. Compare that to Pennsylvania, where there's a small chunk coming from the state, and it's not being distributed systematically based on need. So just that in and of itself shows you a difference in philosophy and policy that makes a huge difference when you then go to the neediest schools in those two systems. The other thing that was crucial that Ontario did was a drastic downsizing in the number of school districts that they have. They call them school boards there. So they have now, after this downsizing, 72 school boards. In Pennsylvania, we have 500 school districts. So what that means is we have a very parochialized system that essentially allows for the sort of segmentation that means that there's a wealthy district on one side of the boundary and a poor district on the other side of the boundary. In the series, I talk about Chester Upland, which is a very poor, predominantly African-American district in Delaware County in southeastern Pennsylvania. That district just does not exist in Ontario. There's no district like that because when you look at it, it's so poor, it's so needy, and it's surrounded by some of the wealthiest districts in the state of Pennsylvania, all within, you know, a 10-square-mile area. That just doesn't happen in Ontario. And so their systems, I think, by incorporating much more of a socioeconomic diversity in students, that forces each system to recognize the needs of all kids in a different way. Here, I think, you know, we have wealthy districts who can just focus on serving predominantly wealthy students, and then we have poor districts who struggle to serve predominantly poor populations. And, you know, the research shows that that sort of segregation really disadvantages the poor kids, and that when you have more of a blend in diversity along racial and socioeconomic lines, it does wonders for the kids who are coming from, you know, lower status.
I mean, I know in Pennsylvania, education funding can be a controversial issue. Did you get a sense of whether there was any pushback from the wealthier school districts in Ontario when they started implementing these changes on the province level?
There's certainly pushback to all of these things along a certain spectrum, but it can't be. It has to be recognized that they just come from a much more egalitarian mindset there. The idea that there is going to be fairness and that disadvantaged people will be prioritized is just so ingrained in them in a way that, you know, it's a little shocking compared to the conversations that we're used to in Pennsylvania. But you see that across the board, and that's another critical part of, you know, I'm looking at schools. A lot of things happen, obviously, in communities and neighborhoods and in cities and towns and everything before children get to schools. And so in Ontario, where you have universal health care, where you have a commitment to more equitable housing, you have a much wider social safety net. All those things, A, show their egalitarian nature, and B, contribute to the success of their school system, because then the educators don't have to start from such a point of deficit.
Right. So it seems like from your reporting that Ontario's success, it hasn't just come from just giving money to struggling schools. It seems like they've invested in other parts of the pipeline, like teacher training or universal pre-K. What were the impacts of those programs that you saw and that investment at those levels?
You're absolutely right. And you know, we should point out that, you know, when we're talking about school finance and money into schools, Pennsylvania is spending more per pupil than Ontario is, right? So that point can't be whitewashed over, and it's an important one to make. Part of it is the stuff we were just talking about. The other investments in the safety net certainly help that. A lot of our costs in Pennsylvania for schools go to things like teacher health care, for instance. Well, that's taken care of there, so that's not an apples-to-apples comparison in the financing. But to your point, yeah, you know, universally it's known that more money matters only when it's spent well and there's a very smartly laid out plan that is executed by a strong team of leadership, right? That's when money really makes a difference. And so Ontario has had a strong vision that's been cohesive over time. So that's tremendously helped. When new leadership comes in, they're not, you know, trying to reinvent the wheel. They're largely following a similar vision. And they're making crucial investments in the things that end up mattering the most in classrooms, which are teachers and early childhood education. Teacher training in Ontario is just more robust and it's harder to get into, right? And they have an oversupply now of teachers, which means they can be even more selective with the people they're choosing to enter the profession. And then they're demanding that after college, to get your teacher certification there, it takes 2 full years. And there's tons of in-classroom practice happening in those 2 years. And that used to just be a one-year program, and they've doubled it. So now it's 2 years. In Pennsylvania, you can become a certified teacher in the same amount of time that you can get your bachelor's degree. But you can also become a certified teacher without ever having taken a college course in education. Anybody with a bachelor's degree can apply to get an emergency certification that, you know, you're a teacher in a couple weeks, and typically you're a teacher in the most disadvantaged communities, which have a hard time finding and staffing their positions. So you have the situation where often very dedicated, very motivated, excited young teachers are being put without much experience into our most challenged schools. And there's pros and cons to that conversation, but it can't be ignored that their system rejects that premise and puts a lot of emphasis on the preparation of teachers and then also the preparation of early childhood education. So while here in PA we're still debating the merits of pre-K and how much we should be investing in it, and we've made more investments over time, there they've committed to a universal program for 2 years. So all 4- and 5-year-olds are eligible to go into a cohort and have full day pre-K and kindergarten. Here we have full day kindergarten, that's universal, but the pre-K part is very scattershot. And it depends on where you live and whether or not there happens to be a provider in your area that is rated highly by the state.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. WPSU's Eleanor Klibanoff is speaking with Keystone Crossroads' Kevin McCoury, discussing how Ontario's education system stacks up to Pennsylvania's.
So there seems to be less emphasis on standardized testing in Ontario than what we see here in Pennsylvania or in the United States more broadly. How are they measuring teacher and student success in Ontario, if not by testing?
Well, they are testing. They just do it less. So here we test in 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, and then 3 tests in high school. There, they're doing it 3rd grade, 6th grade, and high school, once in high school. And then here, you know, we do put a lot of stock into what the standardized test says about the schools and the teachers and the kids. And we use those tests to make, you know, widespread decisions about things that have tremendous effect. So their philosophy is, you know, the test can be instructive, but it's just a test. It's not a holistic measure. You have to take into account a lot of other factors. And, you know, the reports that they put out for each school based on their standardized tests are filled with just all this wealth of other data, trying to put everything in context, trying to paint as true of a picture as they can of that specific school's context and environment. Whereas here, often it's just here's the name of the school, here's the scores, line it up, and we can tell you which schools do better than others. The ones at the bottom are failing schools; the ones at the top are succeeding. End of story. So I think they're more nuanced in the way they think about the scores. And then when they see low scores, they say, how can we better support the individuals, the teachers, and the students in those buildings to reverse course? And so it's more of a concentrated support model. It's encouraged teachers and allowed teachers to decide to commit careers to schools that are in harder to serve communities, because there's not an axe over their heads to some degree to say, you know, if the scores don't go up, you're going to lose your job or we're going to close the school. And that's certainly been the case in Pennsylvania. And a lot of educators know that, you know, it's not going to look good for my career to go to a school that has bad scores. And I can work and sweat as much as I can to raise them, and maybe we will raise them, but it's still not going to look as good as, you know, the school in the wealthy district next door, where A, I can be paid more, and then based on those higher scores, my evaluations are going to be better, and I'm going to look like a better esteemed educator. You have a talent gap built in based on a lot of this inequity, where just the systems themselves are set up to disincentivize people from taking the jobs in the neediest communities. And so you kind of have to be a saint. You have to decide that this is a moral thing for me to do, to take a job in a very, you know, challenged school in Pennsylvania. Whereas in their system, there's just much more parity. And so then, you know, it's not going to matter. Your pay isn't going to be different. You're not going to be judged worse, and you're going to be supported.
So compared to Pennsylvania, this series sort of highlights Ontario as the success story. Are they a perfect example to follow, or did you find sort of aspects that the province could improve upon?
Well, there's a lot of internal debate in Ontario about some of the same things that we see in Pennsylvania. You know, you'll have principals and teachers say that the teacher seniority system there is too strong and is out of whack and isn't serving the children correctly. You have that debate in Pennsylvania. You have a debate, too, about equity there, just because even if the system itself is making things equitable, there are still wealthy neighborhoods and there are still poor neighborhoods. And the wealthy neighborhoods can do private fundraising and raise more money for schools, obviously, than the poorer schools. So that's still a focus. One of the major challenges for their system is the indigenous population, especially clustered in the farther northern sections of the province, where it's very hard to get to. A lot of these are communities you only can get to by helicopter, and so that's put a disadvantage for them trying to attract, again, teachers to those communities and have them stay there. So that's something that they're actively working on. In general, the idea of closing racial and ethnic achievement gaps is still an issue there that clearly, despite all of the things that they do to promote equity, there are still these large achievement gaps that cause people to say, or could cause you to say, well, look, despite all this emphasis on equity and really trying to do everything you can to advantage this disadvantaged school or community, it still hasn't made as much of a difference as you would have hoped or maybe expected. And, you know, and that, I think, could cause people in Pennsylvania to have a little pause in how they think about how is we can go best about closing those gaps as well.
And so, speaking of people in Pennsylvania considering some of these initiatives, when you got back from reporting, you took some of these ideas from Ontario to people in Pennsylvania to see what they thought. So what did you hear from, you know, educators, parents, leaders in this big debate we're having in Pennsylvania?
Well, you know, I talked to the Pennsylvania Education Secretary, Pedro Rivera, and, you know, as part of the Wolf administration, their model, the Ontario model, is much the ideal of that administration. So they see in it a lot of the things that they want and desire. They want less focus on local property taxes and more funding to come from the state. They want more money to go through a coherent formula that takes into account the needs of students. They want more money in the system. They want to embrace diversity and all the things that the series on Ontario kind of highlights very much aligns in a way with their mode of thinking. You hear that too from you know, predecessors in the governor's mansion, where I talked to Ed Rendell's former policy director, Donna Cooper, who now runs an advocacy group in Philadelphia. And to her, you know, this is a question about basically moving into a 21st century economy and saying, if we don't start to make our systems more equitable and start better serving the most disadvantaged kids in the state, we're going to have a huge gap in you know, the workers of the next century's economy, that people just aren't going to be ready for the rise of globalization and automation that's obviously already been occurring. And so unless we come up to speed quickly, we're going to be having our lunch eaten by states that are doing this better and by countries that are doing this better. Unfortunately, the Republican leadership didn't feel comfortable talking with me about this series. And I think partly it was because there was the end of their legislative calendar was about when I was doing this reporting, and they didn't have the chairs of their education committees in at the time. So I didn't end up getting input from them, unfortunately. But, you know, there are many people who share a lot of their philosophies that I was able to speak with. You know, the Commonwealth Foundation, for instance, is, you know, a big proponent of small government. And, you know, to them, obviously, Canada's and Ontario's social safety net and the amount of money that goes into that in the form of taxes is just, you know, is a non-starter. And I think that, you know, they're very skeptical that anything could be taken from, you know, this comparison just because it's such different governments and systems and you know, philosophies underlying these things. And they also say, you know, this fight focus on equity and focus on how can we better serve, lower socioeconomic status students isn't the best focus. And they say that there's, been such a hyper focus on this idea in the wake of the federal No Child Left Behind law, which really, ushered in this era of standardized testing where schools were being, judged largely on those. And then there was drastic interventions at the lowest performing ones. They're saying, that focus puts the middle performing, the higher performing schools at a disadvantage. And we should be trying to raise all boats and not just focus on the disadvantage. So that was their point.
A little bit earlier, you talked about Pennsylvania's slow changes to the education funding formula. Is there any chance that we become more like Ontario? What would it take to move the needle in that direction?
It's hard to guess, but certainly there is advocacy around these sort of issues, and people have been pushing for things like this for a very long time. Our system is so parochialized that nobody wants to see their district or their children put at a disadvantage, no matter what, right? So there's an inbuilt tension there that makes it hard for our system to fundamentally become more equitable. We're very used to this idea, and it's a noble idea in some regard that if we work ourselves into better situations economically, we can afford to buy property in quote unquote better school districts, and our kids can get a quote unquote better education. There is that pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of American mentality that's inbuilt in the Pennsylvania system, and it's hard to imagine that going away. There should be a robust debate over whether that would be a good idea or not to have that go away. The lessons of Ontario to me are simply, hey, look, here's another place that's doing things completely differently. They're very close by, and by comparison, they're doing better than us. They're producing much higher results on tests that are normed internationally, and they are closing gaps between socioeconomic differences in socioeconomics faster and better than we are. And so that if we're thinking about our Commonwealth and how it's going to be shaped over the next 50, 100 years, and we think about the economy that we're trying to create here and understanding that, we're carrying all boats and, we all will succeed in relation to each other, maybe there's something there that we should be paying closer attention to.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today, Kevin.
Thank you, Eleanor.
That was WPSU's Eleanor Klibanoff talking with Kevin McCoury. McCoury is an education reporter for Keystone Crossroads, a statewide public media project reporting on the challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. He recently visited Ontario, Canada, to compare how Pennsylvania and the province handle education funding. To hear the whole 5-part series, visit keystonecrossroads.org/Ontario. And to hear other interviews in the Take Note series, go to wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.